As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point-of-sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Welcome to the Leaf Report. This is Clark here. Hello, everybody.
Okay, James, we are back. A little bit of a break last week. We did not record, so we have a lot to talk about. How are you doing?
I'm doing better.
Yeah, you were a little under the weather.
Yeah, my week last week, it was a good reminder to go get your flu shot. I was all signed up to get mine, and then I got really, really sick on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So that's why the podcast didn't happen last week.
Well, it works out okay because it gives us lots to talk about this week, and there is obviously plenty to talk about. We need to talk about this hot streak that the Leafs are on and get into some of the reasons why. We need to talk about the David Camp line. That's actually in my notes. So we're going to talk about that, James. We're getting real niche here. We'll take some questions in the pod bag. But first, I think we should just start with kind of the quote-unquote news of the day. Are you okay with that?
I'm down. What's the news of the day? Changes in the lineup?
Yeah, changes in the lineup. So after a pretty lengthy stretch, really the whole month of November so far, I guess that's only 2 weeks, Sheldon Keefe is going to switch things up in the top six. He's going to put Matthews and Marner back together. He's going to put Nylander and Tavares back together, and he's going to give Nick Ritchie another chance on the number one line. What is your reaction to this news?
I thought you were going to say the news of the day was Kyle Clifford was on waivers in St. Louis.
I did not see that, actually.
Yeah, he was just put on waivers there, yeah. I wonder if the Leafs will claim him, given they were offering him a three-year contract a year and a half ago.
Oh, boy.
I think it's fine. I think it... You know, it's interesting that they're 8-1 and they're still changing the lineup around. There probably aren't that many teams and coaches that would make that change. And
yes,
it's almost like they're still looking for more, even though they've produced a lot of offense over that stretch. They're not 100% happy with exactly the way that things look.
So I couldn't pick my finger on like what, why exactly I felt this way, but I wrote in my Monday morning Leaf report. You know, see the connection, James, with the podcast? James with the podcast, Leaf Report, get it? Anyway, I wrote in there that I just didn't think the Matthews-Nylander thing was working, and I really want it to work just because I like to watch those guys when they're kind of in sync. But for some reason, it just never really seemed to click. And one of the things I wish we had the actual analytics for is, does Matthews tend to have the puck less when he plays with Nylander? Does the way that Nylander plays and the way that Marner plays, like, is it more conducive for Matthews now to be with Marner? Because Marner sometimes carries the puck, but he's kind of like moving it and trying to find opportunities. But all of which is to say, like, it just didn't work. I thought Tavares and Marner worked pretty well for the most part until recently, but Sheldon Keefe basically said that's the reason he's kind of changing it. He didn't feel like Matthews and Nylander really clicked, which is what I kind of felt, but couldn't articulate why.
Well,
and do you see that?
And he also said that they were producing kind of a lot of chances and a lot of offense, but they weren't doing so with each other, kind of thing, right? Like, that was sort of the what he said.
Yeah, like and you can think of it, like, there weren't a lot of times when you say, man, like, that was a great play that Nylander just made for Matthews or vice versa. It was almost like they were doing it kind of,
yeah, only on the power
as
play.
Like solo artists. Yeah,
only,
you know,
on the power play we've seen them connect for goals, but at even strength, not really.
It's weird, like, I because they were so great together their first few years in the league, and I guess they're different players now. Like, I think that's part of it. I don't think we've seen Matthews best so far. The numbers are okay. They're not like out of this world like last year. He just feels like he's still maybe finding his way after the surgery.
Well, he hasn't pulled you out of your seat the way that he,
yes,
you know, last season in that just amazing, you know, he's a runner up for the Hart Trophy. He just had wins the Rocket Richard. It just felt like he could score at will and impose his will on the game. And every time he was on the ice, it's kind of like watching McDavid now. Every time he's on the ice, it makes a huge impact. I don't think Matthews has played poorly, but he hasn't really been that kind of, you know, undisputably the best player on the ice as much as you would have expected right now.
Well, it's like if you were to rank their best players so far this year,
Jack
number
Campbell.
One would be Campbell. Number two, either Tavares or Nylander.
Yep.
And then three, the other one. And then four, probably like Marner. Maybe. I mean, he had obviously the slow start. Maybe.
It could be Matthews. I mean, when at that point.
Like, could be Matthews, yeah. Sure. I mean, he does have, I think, three power play goals. Like, he's found a little bit of a home there. But I like the idea of getting Marner back with him. Obviously, it didn't work early this season. And I think there are explainable reasons for that. Marner didn't get off to a very good start. He's changed. Like, he's not as tight or doesn't feel at all tight like he did to start the year. And obviously Matthews was just coming off the surgery and no training camp, no preseason. So maybe it'll work now better than it had been. But I like that they're at least trying things. I think this was something you brought up a bunch last year, is that they should just be playing around with different combinations just in case.
I mean, the regular season, it's so long and there are so many games. And you know, in recent years, the Leafs making the playoffs has not been, I guess I shouldn't say that because there was the one year where they almost missed. But, you know, last season, they didn't really have to worry about missing the playoffs. This year, it looks like they're going to pretty comfortably get in just with the way the division's shaping up, with Montreal falling off. You know, we'll see. I mean, I know Detroit's off to a good start, but it really feels like there's going to be four teams in the Atlantic that make it and four that don't. You know, the Leafs have, especially with winning eight of their last nine, they've got a little breathing room to try some different things. So I think it makes sense to continue to shuffle the lineup. And, you know, they're getting a lot of, this is probably where you're going to go next, they're getting a lot of different looks at different defense pairings as well, which I think is a positive.
That actually wasn't where I was going to go next, but let's talk about that, because obviously since we last did the podcast, Justin Hall has re-entered the lineup. He's played with Jake Muzzin again. I kind of feel that barring like another situation where those guys are playing like they were before, that that's what they're going to stick with. That's what they'd prefer to stick with. And then it just kind of becomes a rotation with those three bottom guys. And I wonder how you go about handling that if you're Sheldon Keefe, because it's not as if any of those guys have played poorly. You know what I mean? Like, Liljegren's played way better than I expected. Sandin's been totally fine. Dermott's been fine. Like, I don't love Dermott in the top four, but on the third pair, I think it's fine. Like, do you think you have to make a trade? Like, I just don't buy into that idea just because you have a guy sitting that suddenly you have to make a trade.
No, but I can see why they're looking at it, though. I mean, I think that they want to know what their options are if it does come to that. That they feel like either they need the cap space and the roster flexibility. You probably don't want to have all season Justin Hall at $2 million sitting in the press box, you know, as much as he has.
But I think that's over now. I think.
You think he's going to play every night?
Yeah.
So the rotation's going to be more like Dermott, Liljegren, Sandin, like we thought it was coming into the year?
That's what I expect.
Hmm.
Don't you think that's what they want? Like, I just don't see, unless they trade for a better defenseman, which, I mean, if I don't know how you make that work. But I just think Hall is their best option to play there. I didn't love Dermott with Riley. I don't know if you did.
No, I didn't think it worked. So
I don't think it works, right?
Their options might be like, if you want to trade Dermott, you're probably not going to get hardly anything in return. So,
well, it's almost like you need to trade Dermott and something else that gets you a better one player. You know what I mean? Like a 2-for-1 kind of thing.
Yeah. Those are pretty.
And then it's like you're trading like.
Those are pretty hard deals to make because other teams usually aren't anxious to do that. So, I think part of them looking at trading a defenseman is really motivated by the cap situation. You know, Mikheyev comes back, Mrazek comes back, they're going to be down to like basically a minimum roster, and they're going to have to put someone on waivers, and they're not going to be.
Well, and you can't build
no
space.
Yeah, they won't be accruing cap space. It'll make them really tight for the trade deadline. So, you know, and if you do trade a defenseman, it all of a sudden it feels like you're really thin, though. If you run into injuries, then what are you going to do?
We should talk about how well they've played. Like, I don't think they played especially well against Buffalo. Obviously, I thought they were okay against Calgary, but they're rolling. They're picking up wins. They're now kind of right there with Florida for first in the division, which like 2 weeks ago, it was like the world was ending. So things have changed. The number one factor, obviously, without question in this streak is Jack Campbell. I'm really intrigued to see how they kind of handle this just because they don't obviously have a lot of insurance behind him. He's a guy who hasn't played that much in his career, like in a specific season. He's had injury troubles. Like, I wrote about this today, so it's like top of mind for me. How do you kind of avoid not overworking him when he's playing so well and the other guys are kind of all just humongous question marks?
They don't really have a choice right now. I mean, it's, when do you expect that Mrazek will be back?
Early December?
Yeah.
He was walking around the rink today and like, he just, like, he looks fine, but they're obviously going to be really careful with this, given that they gave it 2 weeks before and then it popped up after one start. So
I think you try and find the soft spots in the schedule that you can play a Joseph Woll or a Hutchinson. And I think they did a good job of that against Buffalo. I mean, that's a team that the Leafs should be able to beat, even if the goalie's letting in 4 or 5 goals, which they did.
Yeah.
I think you just have to keep looking for those games. And riding Campbell, you know, playing Campbell, you know, 2-3 times a week. Obviously, you're not going to play him on the back-to-backs, and that's what they're going to have to do. I mean, I don't think that there's much choice.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. There aren't those games in the near future. Like, the next chance you might see one of those other guys is Sunday night on the 21st. They play in Brooklyn against the Islanders. Like, that's, they're not off to the best start, but that's a good team. Then they play Colorado, Minnesota, Winnipeg. I mean, Columbus on Tuesday, December 7th. Columbus played well. Then it's Tampa, and then it's, I guess, Chicago you could throw in there. And then there's a Western Canadian road trip. I just think like you have to be really careful just because you don't want this guy to wear down or potentially get hurt. Like an injury right now to Campbell would just be devastating.
Yeah, the tricky thing is the back-to-backs coming up, right? Because they've got a number of them before Mrazek's probably back. So you're going to be forced into a situation where you're going to have to...
Maybe only one or two. Maybe only two, James.
Yeah, but you're going to have to play Joseph Woll against the Islanders on the second night of a back-to-back on the road.
Yeah.
Like, that's tough. And then you've got the, on the road, the Minnesota and Winnipeg. Like,
yeah, not an easy back-to-back.
So you might end up sacrificing some points in some of those games.
Are you surprised that they're for now, like, are kind of done with Michael Hutchinson again, or at least that's how it looks? I mean, I remember you wrote after the last game he played, you're like, they can't play this guy.
Yeah. Yeah. When everything was on fire and the first 6-7 games of the season, I kind of wrote out the things that were most problematic. And one of the there were four things. One of the main things on the list was Hutchinson. But one of the other main things on the list was that the fan base was losing their mind. It was like the market was just going insane and, you know, they needed some wins to turn things around. So they've turned things around, but it seems to me that management agrees that Hutchinson can't be part of the answer. And, you know, Joseph Woll has not accomplished anything in the AHL to suggest that he should be a regular in the NHL, but they're just going to give him a shot.
Do you think you try to just go out and get someone else?
Well, I think if there was a goalie, like Wedgwood ended up on waivers. I can't remember if the timeline, if the Leafs would have been able to claim him or not with when Mrazek went down. But like if there's a veteran goalie that ends up on waivers, and that tends to happen a lot, I think they should just claim one of those guys and use him until Mrazek's back to full health.
Yeah, I just don't think you can make yourself this vulnerable. Like I don't love it. Like it just increases the pressure on Campbell.
And it's why I didn't like bringing Hutchinson back to begin with, because you just, even though he played well in the games he played last year, he has like one or two brutal games and it's like, oh boy.
And it feels that way. And this kind of highlights, and let me make this like a super negative situation because the team is in obviously a good place, but like this does highlight their inability to kind of develop goalies. Like they just haven't done it at all. And like some, in a situation like this, you'd love to have a young kid who's something intriguing, and maybe you don't have to sign Peter Mrazek to a 3-year deal because you've got this young kid.
Well, it's the best option because you've got someone who's waiver exempt, who's cheap, who you can just, you know, ideal world, your third and fourth goalies are good young players that you don't mind playing once in a while.
Yes. Yes.
But the Leafs haven't had that since Reimer Scrivens, like whenever that was.
Now, let me ask you this, because let's get back to Campbell. At what point do we say, and maybe there is no point this year. I was going to say, like, at what point can you say that this is real and like something you can bank on? Or does he need a full season at minimum before you can say that?
I think what's real is that Campbell's a good goalie. I think you can say that now. The degree of certainty you can assign to that, I mean, it depends on, you know, like I thought coming into this season that Jack Campbell was a good goalie, you know, like we saw what he played last year. He played well. He had stretches in LA where he was a good goalie. You know, he had a really good AHL season. He was an AHL All-Star. You know, he's been pretty solid the last 5 or 6 years. Now he's had injuries and he's been a backup. He hasn't played that much. So, the unknown for him is what you were saying earlier, where you don't know if he can take on the starter load of 55 games a year. It's not all guys can, not very many goalies can and play well, but I do think he's a good goaltender.
I think that's fair. I guess the question is he a good goaltender who can be your number one and take you to a Stanley Cup? Like, I guess that's TBD.
I think it's possible. I think he certainly has the physical athletic gifts to do that.
Yeah, and obviously he has the pedigree. Like, it's not like this is some random guy. Like, I mean, Tim Thomas kind of came out of nowhere and just was like all of a sudden unbelievable, right? Like, I don't even think he was drafted. Was he drafted?
No.
Okay.
No. And he was in he was over in Finland playing, and he played, I think he played all 4 years of college, and he played in the AHL a long time. And there are goalies. Good goalie, it's such a weird position to measure, and it's such a, There are lots of guys that don't establish themselves until their mid to late 20s, which is kind of, you know, Campbell, I don't believe, won his first NHL game. I think he was 26.
He didn't win a game with Dallas, I don't think.
No, right? He just played one and he got lit up when he was like 20 years old. That was the only opportunity he got in the NHL. So, you know, his path is a little bit unique, but not so much that it's impossible that he becomes a really good goalie.
Yeah, I mean, he's 29, and this will make the contract situation pretty interesting. I think we touched on that briefly last time, but at last check, like they're not talking yet. And that's going to be, it gets more interesting if he keeps this up, because obviously it just increases the pressure on his next contract. But we're a ways from that, I guess. Anyway. All right, James, let's take a break. And then I want to talk about the camp line. And then I also want to talk a little bit more about the offense. And then we'll do the pod bag. So we'll be right back.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Okay, James, which do you want to talk about first, camp or the offense?
Let's talk about the offense, because I don't know why you want to talk about the third line so badly.
Because like we're a niche Leaf podcast. We got to get into the weeds.
We're not niche, man. We're number one, baby.
Okay. All right. So something I wondered about and wrote about last week is the offense beyond the big guys. There was obviously that streak where the four guys, Matthews, Marner, Nylander, and Tavares, scored like 16 straight goals. I do still look at the rest of their lineup and think, I don't know where they're going to be able to count on goals. Do you feel the same, or am I just like making something out of nothing?
I think what they need is if the third line is going to be constructed the way that it is, they need the fourth line to be something. And, you know, it's been interesting having Bunting down on the fourth line a little bit. They look a little bit more dangerous. I almost think you got to give Spezza someone to play with that he can create something and they can bang in a goal once in a while.
I mean, in theory, that should be Richie. Like, if
yeah, and he's looked okay there, and there have been moments for him, but you know, I don't know that scoring depth is. I don't know. That's a tough one.
Okay, well let me kind of explain where I'm at. Like, I just look at it when you get into a playoff series, which is what this is all about. Like, the regular season, it's going to be fine. Like, I haven't looked where they rank now offensively, but offensively during the regular season, they'll be fine. It's just you look during a playoff series and you think, okay, those top two lines, like, they need them to produce, obviously. That third line is not, like, you're not going to be able to expect anything. Like, maybe you'll get, like, the odd goal in a 7-game series.
Yeah, Kampf scored a big one against Buffalo.
Yeah. So maybe, like, over a 7-game series, you might get a couple goals max from those guys. Maybe nothing.
I liked your story you wrote about how the Leafs are working with some of those guys and getting them, like, Engvall and Kampf, and they want them to, like, shoot from more dangerous areas and, like, try and get to the net a little bit more. And I mean, the Kampf goal, everyone was making fun of how ridiculous it was, but he does take the puck and like skate into traffic, and then it banks off a whole bunch of people and goes in. And the only way that lands the line is going to score is if they do that more often.
Yeah. And like Kasha can score. Like, obviously, at this point, when we're recording this, he scored in 3 straight games. He can score. It's just the way that line's used, their chances to score aren't going to be a lot. Although they do a pretty good job of starting in the D zone and transitioning and ending up in the other end. But like, let's say that line, you're not going to be able to count on it for offense. And then like you mentioned, that fourth line, it's like, can you really in a seven game series expect very much at all from Simmons, Spezza, and whoever? Like,
well, they're playing, maybe, they're playing 9-10 minutes of your even strength ice time. And, you know, teams, I haven't looked at what the number is. Teams usually get like whatever, 48 minutes of even strength ice time a game. So, you know, it's not an insignificant, it's like more than 20% of the time at even strength are out there. They gotta do something.
I just don't think you're going to be able to get anything. And then it's like, you look beyond the other guys, even in the top six, and it's like, Kerfoot's rolling right now, but we'll see. Bunting is like still learning. Like, he's still young in his NHL career. Like, I don't know that there's anything you can do. I mean, this is the way they're structured. They're structured so that their big guys need to carry them. And if they don't, they'll lose.
They really do need guys like Kerfoot and Kasha and some of these other players to, like, Richie at some point to do something. You know,
what's your date that Richie gets his first goal? Do you think it's next game?
With the Leafs, or does he get moved to another team and then he scores somewhere? I don't know. He hasn't even looked threatening for a goal. I mean, I know he produced in the preseason, so it's going to have to be one of those ones that banks off some people and he taps it in, or it goes off his leg or something like that.
Yeah. All right. Before we get to the pod bag, let's just talk briefly about the camp line. I just think they've been really good. Like, I think they've done exactly what Sheldon Keefe wants. I think this is clearly what he wanted last year. A line like this that could just, like, their ozone starts, it's like nothing, which it shouldn't be. Like, that's the way it should be. But like, they've done a good job. They don't get scored on a bunch. Their underlying numbers are pretty good. Like, Kampf is kind of like, I think they've found something. I don't know what, but like, it's interesting. Ideally, that's a fourth line, I think, though.
It'd be interesting to know in the analytics and video what they identified in Kampf that made him the guy that they wanted to be the centerpiece of that line. Like, it seems to me from what, like, he for whatever reason, he's able to just get pucks with control from one end of the ice to the other, I think is the key.
Yeah. Like, he has a little bit of skill. Ability. Like, I'm trying to think of some of the guys that they had in way back, like Jay McClement and like, who's the other guy?
Well, it's Jared not like Smithson. He just gets the puck and like shovels it out of the zone or dumps it in or whatever. It's like, he tries to,
he can skate too.
Yeah. He can skate and he can handle the puck a little bit.
Well, and then you combine him with Kasha, who plays his ass off, and like, Engvall is kind of hit or miss with that kind of stuff. But like, you've got three guys who can skate, little bit of ability, smart defensively in their own zone. Like, I just think it opens up more opportunity for Matthews and Tavares, which is a good thing, and which is something that they haven't had in the past couple of years. So I just wanted to get that in there.
You are a fan, I can tell.
Yes. I like Kasha. Like, I think, like, I watched him, like, the first day at camp. I'm like, that guy, like, you watch him. I'd watched him, obviously, in Anaheim, and then he obviously didn't play that much after that. But, like, you see him in person, you're like, that guy, like, he's a legit player. Anyway, let's take a break, and then let's do the pod bag.
At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at ikea-usa.com today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, James, pod bag time, and a reminder to support your local restaurants. We tried this place, Rosie's Burger in Toronto, Burgers, which I guess opened a Toronto location after starting in Port Credit. And it's just like unbelievable. I'm on a mission. I'm going to try like every burger place in the city. This one gets my thumbs up. Big thumbs up if you're looking for a burger. So that's all I got to say.
I'll keep that in mind.
What do you got?
All right. Ben from the UK has a question for us. He says, I love the pod, guys. Thanks for keeping a UK Leafs fan entertained. We get a lot of readers from other countries, which is... I never noticed. I guess because I didn't see the data and stuff from when I was writing in the newspaper. But we have a lot of readers in Asia and Australia and the UK for sure.
That's great. I'm a big UK everything fan. I love the TV, the music, the food. Go ahead.
He asks, in the Lou Lamoriello, Kyle Dubas era, what secondary tier Leafs were the hardest to say goodbye to? Whether, you know, how good they were as players or how much he liked dealing with them in the media. I think I believe he's asking this because Leo Komarov was on waivers and is going to the KHL as of the weekend. And I tweeted this story, a story I'd written about Leo Komarov a couple of years ago and just like how great he was to deal with. And those guys that are like kind of like characters are always fun when you're either a fan or in the media to deal with.
Yeah, you know what I liked about him? Like, he's a real dude. Like, he's just not... Some guys, like, you deal with as media and players, like, there's a degree of... Like, you just don't get to know them that well, and I kind of felt like...
Well, it's kind of a very fake relationship, right?
Well, it's just like... And how could it not be? Like, yeah. If you're the player, like, you don't know these people, so... But with Komarov, like, it really felt like he just is one of the... Like, just a dude. And I just remember, like, that one story I did... Where after a game, he was asking me about Corsi, I think, and just what it meant and like what he thought of it. And anyway, he was just a good guy to deal with. I know you and I both like dealing with Zach Hyman over the years. Like, he was always thoughtful, took the time. I mean, a lot of those guys, like those core guys that kind of had to go because the Leafs couldn't afford to keep them, were great to deal with. Like, Nazem Kadri was like a number one pick for quotes.
Andreas Janssen's lighting it up with New Jersey. He's been their leading scorer this year.
Yeah.
After a brutal year last season.
Well, and to connect it back to what we were just talking about with like depth, like those guys were on the team and now they're not. And like, it's hard to replace them, right? Like, those are good players. Like, even James Van Riemsdyk obviously was, I didn't realize it, but I heard it on the broadcast one of those nights. Like, he scored the most goals during those 6 years with the Leafs. Like,
oh, he was so lose him. He was so consistent, right?
Yeah,
and so relatively healthy when he played here.
Yeah,
the Leafs have lost a lot of guys that were like really good personalities and that I enjoyed talking to. And you know, we haven't been in the dressing room like interacting with the players the way that it is because of obviously the pandemic. But I don't know. I don't know the dressing rooms. Maybe we'd feel different if we were in there more. I don't know, but like the personality is not the same.
It's not the same. It's just not. And I think part of it is what you're talking about. I think part of it is just the personalities are different. And that's going to be the way it probably is now, right? Like, they're just going to kind of recycle a lot of these one-year contracts. You know what I mean? Like, that's the nature of the way that they're built.
Yeah.
Right?
Turn over a lot of the roster every year. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nathan asks, I mean, we talked about this. Can Jack Campbell keep up this level of play? Do you think he can be a Vezina nominee? I think it's possible. I really do. You know, there's something about this that to me feels like there's some legitimacy to it. You know, this is the second year in a row. Just from talking to all the people that know Jack Campbell, and I don't know, I feel like that there's something that he has there that's pretty special.
Well, what's interesting to me is this looks like last year.
Yep.
And I think that suggests something, some like legitimacy that he's found something.
I would even say, Jonas, that I think he's like less scrambly this year. Like, it feels like he's less. I mean, there are definitely moments where he's all over the place. Well, I think it was against, what was the play where I think it was against the Flyers in overtime, right? And he was like all over the place. But, you know, that's the kind of goalie that he is a little bit, where he's got that scramble ability.
Well, I wondered why Steve Briere doesn't seem to get mentioned much when it comes to Campbell. And I guess part of it is just what you were talking with the dressing room. Like, they're just a lot of that stuff, like, you'd pick through the weeds when you're just in the dressing room and talking to a player. And it's a little harder in those scrums. And like, Campbell doesn't like kind of divulging certain things. But you, I mean, just like, you look at Vezina Trophy candidates right now. The NHL save percentage leaders at the time we're recording this, number one, Jack Campbell, 939. Number two, your boy Frederik Andersen, 938.
Yeah, he's been great.
And then it's Markstrom, Sorokin, Shesterkin, Saros, Gibson, Vasilevsky.
Mm-hmm. I could see Markstrom's, yeah, the way that the Flames are playing so well defensively, I could see Markstrom being a candidate for sure.
Right? Like, it's not inconceivable that he ends up as one of the finalists. Obviously, there's a long way to go. He's got to stay healthy is probably the big thing. But quite a run.
All right. Bang Bang has a question for you, Jonas.
Okay.
He says, where do you think Dubas ranks as a GM in the league? Has he lived up to his reputation as someone who thinks outside the box? Or is he another guy who overvalues his own players and has a middling record?
That's a good question.
Yeah. I struggle sometimes to evaluate exactly where Dubas fits in kind of the... He's not at the bottom. I mean, like, you look at the worst executives and GMs in the league, and it's a pretty sad list. And I mean, we can just,
they all keep their jobs for years and years and years.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some things that Kyle Dubas has done really well. It's a bit early to say how his draft record is gonna play out, and obviously they've traded a lot of picks as they've gone for it. There have been clear mistakes.
Yep.
And, you know, there have been some things they've done really well. I mean, Jack Campbell right now, I think you wrote about this last week. Jack Campbell right now looks like a brilliant acquisition. Jake Muzzin was a good acquisition. TJ Brodé was a good one. You know, I think that Kyle Dubas's reputation / legacy, whatever you want to call it, is there's a lot of that that's riding on this season. And you know, he's shown this belief in the top players and not wanting to really change that group. And they have to make good on that belief. Otherwise, I think that, you know, this could be his last year here. And if that's the case, then he's not going to be remembered as, you know, a difference maker here.
I think that was well said. I think that's fair. I think he's certainly in the top half of the league. Certainly.
Yeah. I think probably like the lower part of the top half, you know, until you know, his teams show that they can get over the hump. I mean, even right now, they've won 8 of 9 games. They're ninth in the league. That's kind of what this team is. You know, I think they are kind of in that second tier in the league. And they haven't proven that they're more than that yet.
Well, his basic bet is that those guys that you talked about are going to figure it out. Yeah. And if it doesn't work, then it won't work. And if they figure it out, he'll look like he knew what he was doing.
All right. Larry wants to know, who do you think will be the next defenseman and the next forward called up from the Leafs, called up to the Leafs from the Marlies if they need to? Is there anyone that's caught your eye in terms of that's playing well? I think probably if it's a defenseman they call up, it's just going to be one of those veteran guys. It's not very interesting, like Dahlstrom or Biega, and they probably only play like 10 minutes a game if they get into a game. And you know, as we talked about earlier, they got 7 defensemen. So unless they make a trade, we're a couple injuries away from one of those guys seeing any time. In terms of forwards, I've liked Semyonov so far from what I've seen from him. He looks fine. The one that might be interesting, although he's cooled off a little bit lately, is if Hosang would get a look if they have a couple injuries up front. Or is there someone else? I Joey Anderson's been a guy they've been scratching and calling up and stuff.
I guess it depends what the injury would be. Like, if it was an injury in their top six, I would think that they would call up. I guess it depends. Like, I would think that Hosang would be in the conversation, but it just depends on where the rest of the lineup is at, right? Like, if they need someone to play on their bottom line, Semyonov makes sense. I like him. I think you're right. Like, and I've read some of the quotes you've put out from Bob Hartley, and they kind of ring true for me. And Jason Spezza was talking about him today at practice, and he made a good point. He's like, he's not a kid. Like, I think he's 26. Like, he's not one of these guys who's like 20 and like still really young and inexperienced. Like, he's been around.
Joshua Cloak, who spends a lot of time around the Marlies and the prospects in the organization, said that The organization has been really impressed with how smart Semyonov is on the ice, and he's kind of like, I think
you can see it. His feel for the game is really strong.
Yeah, and I think they knew that, but it's been even better. And you know, some guys come over from the KHL, and it's such a huge adjustment. But for him, he's been able to do it and make that adjustment really smoothly.
Well, and I'm wrong, James. He's actually 27. So
he's not going to win the Calder then, is what you're saying.
Well, I guess it's not that it's like a lesser version of Mikheyev. Like Mikheyev came over, I guess he was 25, but like you're getting kind of like a ready-made product.
It's another like Barabanov kind of bet. Like, you know, Barabanov.
Yeah, that didn't work.
Didn't work out, but I think Semyonov might be like kind of more what they need in terms of, you know, a guy that can fill in on the fourth line.
Yeah.
Kyle A. says, should they have tried to find cap room for Zach Hyman, or is that a massive blunder? For the cost of Nick Ritchie and Alex Kerfoot, they could have kept him. Hyman looks really good. I've watched a lot of Edmonton. You know, I've got McDavid in my pool, so it's I've been paying even more attention to them, and Hyman looks really, really good, you know. And
but how long is it? It's not a 1-year contract, right? Yeah.
So the you know, like the telltale on that contract is going to be, how does he play in year 3, 4, 5 of that deal? And, you know, sometimes I think with some of these contracts, people write a lot of glowing things about them in the first half season or the first year. And then by year 3 or 4 or 5 of the contract, they're writing a completely different story. So, you know, certainly that was part of the concern for the Leafs was just signing on for that long. I think the mistake, Jonas, wasn't clearing the cap space. It was not getting Hyman signed a lot earlier than, like, it doesn't seem like they really tried. As soon as he was eligible for an extension, I would have been trying to sign him.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I don't think that that's a hindsight point by you. I didn't think that at the time, but I know you did.
I guess it's offering him 7-8 years at like a low cap hit to try and get it done. And
The Alex Killorn contract, yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Well, and to add to that, you can really feel that they miss him. I underestimated how much they're going to miss him. Like, you could feel, I mean, you've seen it, like, just in the guys that they've used in those type of roles. Bunting tries really hard. He's just not as big and strong as Zach Hyman. He's just not as good. Nick Ritchie is Nick Ritchie. Like, there's a reason he's bounced around and hasn't lived up to the hype. You know what I mean? Like, you miss a lot when you take a guy like that and you just replace him with kind of like this mishmash kind of solution. I underestimated that. I was wrong about that. So
we have a lot of questions. I put the call out in on our app, and
we got a few minutes.
Shockingly, we got 20 questions in like 45 minutes or something. Like, they're just piling up here. So sorry to everyone I didn't get to. There's just too many. Derek P asks, let's go quick here, Jonas. He asks, do you think that defensive-minded third line in the playoffs can shut down another team's top line? Like, would you feel comfortable playing that line? Like, let's say right now it's shaping up that they're going to get the Lightning in the first round. Would you play that line against, like, Point and those guys in the defensive zone? I think you'd have to, right?
Well, I think eventually Mikheyev is going to, maybe, I guess Mikheyev will be there, I would think.
Push Engvall out?
I would trust that line. Mm. I mean, I guess the only problem with that is you end up playing those guys as much as like a top line. You know what I mean? Like, what ended up happening for Tampa with their third line is that basically became their number one line. Like, Coleman, Goudreau, and Gord played a ton.
Like, but that's a different group though. Like, that those guys could produce offense, right? Like, there was a counterattack there that was the Leafs don't have on this line.
But I guess when you're at home in a matchup like that, you can kind of split it. Like, Matthews can see hit that line a bunch, and then at least you have another line that you can trust to be out there, you know? By the way, James, just while you're finding that question, Barabanov, 6 points in 9 games this year.
Yeah, he scored some goals that like are pretty decent.
I watched. Yeah, it's kind of funny.
Because it was hard to see that in Toronto. Yeah, it was hard to, like, they played him with Tavares a little bit, and he looked okay, but he wasn't as good as some of the other guys that were playing ahead of him in the lineup. Zach K asks, the results have been better of late. Is it still fair to question the process? They have strong underlying numbers, but they're struggling to score playoff type goals. Sustained offensive zone time, but on the perimeter, forcing cross crease passes, looking for perfect plays. What do you think, Jonas, about like obviously?
I think that's fair.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think they get the benefit of the doubt, unfortunately. Like, it's two consecutive playoffs where they have not been able to
generate. But I just mean, like, the way that they look, they've played this year. Like, does it look like they've evolved or changed enough from last season?
TBD. I think what the question said was fair.
It's interesting how many of these questions have like a playoff slant to them.
I will say though, James, like, yeah. I think Tavares has been around the net more, or it feels that way, than he was last year. Obviously he had the big second half. I think in a playoff series, the way Bunting kind of goes about his business can be helpful in a playoff series.
He's drawn four penalties this year, right? in 16 games.
Yeah. Which is something I kind of expected based on what I learned about
him. That would make him like the team leader by the end of the season if he keeps that up.
Yeah. Anyway, next question.
I mean, like I said, there's a lot of these questions. And Anthony asks, what makes crossing the blue line or going near the Leafs net an unpleasant task for the opposition in the playoffs? There's a lot of people are asking kind of... That's another thing. I'm working on a story that I hope is going to come out tomorrow, and I talk about what's different about this team in terms of the personnel they have. And I look at some of the statistics on like someone like Zach Bogosian versus say like a Sandin or a Liljegren. Very, very different players. So, you know, the makeup of the back end is different, and it just, when you have a different makeup on your team, you're going to have different strengths and weaknesses basically.
Well, I think your reporting on the defenseman was kind of, and I think Elliot Friedman as well, was that's the kind of guy, Bogosian, that they'd like to get again. And I kind of feel that. I'm okay with that. Are you?
Yeah, I think that ideally they'd like to get like a veteran guy that is okay being the six or the seven who doesn't make a ton of money. And I don't know exactly who that is, but... That would be potentially part of moving out a defenseman. We got time for one more?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's see here. How does Kerfoot compare to other players in his salary range? Is he worth keeping around? He was great in the playoffs, but I'm not sure he's worth his salary in the regular season. What's the average salary of a third line player? It's, you know, third lines are in the league are all over the place. You know, some teams have like $5 million centers on their third lines, and you know, that's kind of depends how your team is built. I don't think you want a third line of guys that only make $2 million. I don't think you're going to have enough ability there if you have that. Ideal world, you probably have some like $3 million, $4 million, and maybe some guys on entry-level contracts on your third line, which obviously the Leafs don't have exactly. But the best use for Kerfoot, given what he makes and his skill set, is playing on one of the top two lines with skilled players. I believe that even more than, I know I've been saying that for forever, but I really think that that's, as a playmaker, and that's where his skill set is best utilized.
I agree. Like, he's really smart at this point right now. He's got 10 points in 16 games.
8 points in his last 9 games, Jonas.
And he's useful. Like, they can slide him onto that defensive line when they need him to.
He plays center when someone's hurt, like when Tavares was out.
Right? Like, I don't know how... he is overpaid. I just don't know if it's by that much.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we got to roll, James.
We got to do a longer podcast next time.
Indeed, we do. And get some guests back on. If you haven't already, James, go to theathletic.com/leafreport to sign up. For The Athletic, check out The Athletic Hockey Show if you're looking for some hockey pods. That's all I got, James. That is it for me.
Well, thanks for listening. We'll be back soon.